There are two types of people in this world. Those who have tried the PB&J mixtape by Zool Beer Company and those who have not. And while I say that kind of joking, it is true that this is a life-changing experience, at least in the terms of beer drinking. What I mean is this beer has been on tap around town at multiple bars, but if you don't catch it right when it's on tap and right when the keg is put on, you might not be able to because it just is flying off, I guess not shelves, it's flying out of the kegs. It is flying off shelves where it is held on shelves to the point where people are lining up around the block at Zool Beer Company to get their hands on this beer that you will find out during this podcast tastes exactly like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And while we've talked about the brewing scene in Knoxville and while we've talked about breweries before, it's very rare that we've had a chance to talk about an individual beer. And the reason we're doing that is because it has made such an impact here in Knoxville and has really become almost the house beer of the Scruffy City. So we caught up with Bentley Blackshear, the co-owner and director of brewing operations at Zool, to talk about what makes this beer so special, how they came up with it, what the future holds, and most importantly, for those who have had it before, and by the end of this podcast, for those who are desperate to try it, we're going to talk about how you can get your hands on this delicious beverage. So without further ado, let's jump right into the conversation here on the Scruffy Stuff between me, Ryan Willis, downtown reporter at Knox News, and again, Bentley Blackshear, co-owner and director of brewing operations for Zool Beer Company. But I guess before we talk about the success of the PB&J mixtape, can we talk just a little bit about the success of Zool over the past 3 years? Because we're sitting here right now where I remember I met you for the first time, I believe, took your photo right here beneath the Zool logo, and y'all were just starting out. And now it seems like Zool, when you talk about some of the best beers, the best breweries in town, is always in the conversation. So what has just the reception been like, you know, for the brewery, especially with adding the second location as well?
I think it's been wild beyond what we ever expected. And thank you also for all of that. I mean, it's definitely easy to get caught up in your own little bubble of being here every day and stuff. But it's pretty cool to step back sometimes and look at, you know, the things that we've accomplished, the breweries we've been able to work with, the festival that we're throwing, you know, new taproom location and massive expansion within the brewery. That's all credit to the whole team. You know, it takes a lot of hard work, and I get a lot of praise as, you know, the guy that designs the beers on all that stuff. But one of the things I'm most proud of, you know, with all that success, is we've really successfully, I think, created a wonderful little family of people that are coming to work with a good attitude, you know, and doing things to look out for each other. And that's been a huge factor within all of that growth. So, it just still kind of blown away by, you know, certain areas where, you know, we had these hopes and goals, and like here we are just past our year 3 anniversary, and we've really pretty much knocked off almost all of those kind of big things that we were like, man, if we could just do this, then it could all work really well. So,
and I think, you know, one of the coolest things about it is it's not just the beer, it's the environment. Obviously, like, the branding is huge. I mean, there's you know, if you see a Zool can, it's a Zool can, which I think is awesome. But let's talk about the beer, the PB&J mixtape sour. Just can you just walk me through the origins of that, how the idea came to be, and sort of what the initial conversations were about wanting to create this beer?
Yeah, I mean, we do a whole lot of stuff within that kind of fruited category, or within a lot of beers that, you know, maybe your traditional beer drinker doesn't love as much, or your traditional beer drinker, you know, wouldn't drink beer, but they really tend to love a lot of these fruit-forward profiles, or, you know, cocktail-inspired, or really just nostalgic, we found was a really powerful tool and something that people really responded to. So, I mean, we had a lot of conversations about making like a orange creamsicle push pop, you know, the ones that you would eat when you were a kid, and how can we recreate that? And looking back, it's almost kind of funny that it took us as long as we did to think about, well, a peanut butter and jelly sandwich is something that everybody enjoyed as a kid and all that kind of stuff. So, I think we had really seen a lot of good success with a lot of these nostalgic kind of concepts of things that would bring you back to a certain period or a certain time or something that you used to love but don't really see all the time now as an adult.
You did the orange creamsicle one, though?
Yeah, no? Yeah, we've done okay. That one's called...
That sounds like my lunchbox, man. Yeah. Uncrustable and a orange push pop.
Exactly. You know, that one's called Welcome to Bedrock. It's good also.
Nice.
But I do think that we just really nailed the, like, nostalgic part of your brain, you know, is just incredibly interesting how much that tastes like an uncrustable sandwich. And I think, you know, we look at our product line, and I don't really believe that PB&J is objectively our most delicious product that we make, but I do think it is the most spot on to something, and it is by far the most interesting in the sense of, like, it's hard to believe that it's that on that flavor profile. So I think for a lot of people, you know, before they even take a sip, they you know, take a smell of it, and immediately they're just like, what is going on here? And the level of just like a mental interest that that kind of drums up is really cool. And then I think it's also just a really awesome and fun beer to share with people, especially, you know, your mom, I don't like beer, I don't like any of that craft beer stuff. Well, taste this. And a lot of people are just completely blown away that a beer can taste like that. So it's been a really fun thing, I think, for people to share with other people and, you know, kind of get them into something that they're interested in and within that craft beer world. But then I think, you know, more than anything, it just triggers something in your brain that, you know, brings you really back and really makes you kind of think about, like, what is going on here, which is fun for any kind of food or drink experience.
Yeah. And it's funny, like, I feel like I have not a personal connection to the beer, but like a personal interest in the beer, I guess, because before I moved to Knoxville, I lived in Morganton, North Carolina, and worked there for about a year. And I think a lot of people think they associate Catawba Brewing with Asheville, but, you know, they're based in Morganton and they did these PB&J releases, but they're always a brown ale.
Mm-hmm.
And I always enjoyed it for the longest time. I was like, this is my favorite beer, the raspberry PB&J from Catawba. And then I tried this Zool beer, and I mean, I'm talking about for years, I said, this is my favorite beer. And this blew it out of the water for me. And I'm not the only one. And I, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is because, I mean, it seems like it's hard to get your hands on in a good way. It sounds like y'all have been staying really busy. Is there any way, I mean, I could sit here and talk about the success of the beer that I've seen anecdotally, which is, you know, going to Sutry's and seeing them change out the beer for a PB&J mixtape and seeing people flock to the bar. Or I've heard, you know, stories of people lining up around the block almost for try to get their hands on it. Is there any way just to for you to illustrate just like how successful this has been to somebody who's maybe never heard of it, never even, you know, to put it in perspective, or maybe isn't in tune with the beer scene?
We probably sell it 10 times faster than any product that we create. But yeah, I mean, I just like I said, I think a big factor is the shareability of that. And a lot of people just want to get their hands on a lot to then bring to other people. And it becomes more of this experiential thing than just like sitting around and drinking a beer. But yeah, I mean, on this last release, I think we had about 165 people lined up downtown.
Wow.
And I think maybe 60 to 70 people at Hardin Valley location. And I mean, we sold out that day on a very hefty number of cases. So we continue to up the amount that we're producing to, you know, try to make it last a little longer. On this last one, we limited some people to like one case per person or two cases per transaction. But yeah, I mean, we'll continue to do it. I mean, it's a wonderful thing for the business. I mean, our customers love it. Our staff, I think, some of them tend to really embrace the chaos of that day.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a high energy. Everyone's really, you know, excited about being here and stuff. So
is it like line up early in the morning, like before you open? Did you have it like to that point?
Usually people, like an hour or two before we open.
Really,
we
before the doors
people,
are open.
Yeah.
People bringing out chairs and stuff too, like lining up. I mean, how?
Yeah.
Really?
Some people. And I think, you know, we've looked at other cities and looked at other breweries. And this culturally is a thing that's not just a one-off here. Like it happens all over the country. And it can be a big social event for a lot of those people that are really into craft beer to hang out, connect over different things, or, you know, sometimes they'll even bring beer at 11 in the morning and share it while they're in line, things like that. So,
well, and I know you want to be humble here, but I would say, I mean, and I've been around Knoxville for coming up on 6 years now. I know it happens elsewhere, but like I've never really seen a beer like this take over sort of a town in the way that this has. I mean, it seems like, you know, it's to the point now where I talk about, you know, Knoxville beer, that's like the first thing that comes
it's like I said, it's still just kind of crazy to us that, you know, we knew when we tasted like, oh, this is going to be good, people are going to love it, but we never imagined it was going to be 10 times, you know, a lot of our other products. But yeah, I mean, I hope that people continue and it's not just a flash in the pan for us, and we're definitely looking at some cooler ideas next year with like some interesting different variants and some kind of more structured days around it. We do have another big release right before Christmas. If anyone's looking to grab some for Christmas presents, stocking stuffers, or just to enjoy over the holidays with your family, On December 22nd, that Friday, will be our next PB&J day. So at noon that day, we'll have a couple hundred cases ready to go.
That's 3 days after my birthday and 3 days before Christmas. So anybody that's a listener that wants to gift me some PB&J beer, I'll definitely take it. I guess I want to talk about, too, like I mentioned, you know, the other PB&J beers that I've had before. I mentioned the raspberry one. Again, it was a brown ale. It was different. Mm-hmm. They did a bunch of flavors, too. Like, but raspberry, I think, is what they're most known for. How would you describe this PB&J? Like you said, it tastes like an Uncrustable. Is it a grape jelly? Or I guess just maybe talk about the flavors and sort of how it's made. I mean, I know there's a lot that goes into it, but for the average person.
I think, you know, the big difference between us and a lot of other people that are looking at this PB&J concept is we really kind of threw out a lot of traditional brewing ideology and started to apply a lot more of what we've learned through doing a lot of these kind of fruit forward or gluten free products or not necessarily beer focused products. So, you know, there's a pretty outrageous amount of grape concentrate. There's, you know, 100 pounds of you know, roasted peanuts that go into each batch. But there's little accent things that we do, like citric acid and little kind of nuanced things that we found really bring out certain characteristics or push certain things to the front of the palate.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can taste the crust.
In a lot of ways, you know, we treat that more of like a beverage cocktail that we get to work on a lot more on the back end, which is really fun for us as brewers to get creative and be like, hey, let's make this as delicious as we can possibly make it with all these tools in our tool belt. Whereas with most normal beers, you know, all of that design work kind of happens on the front end of, hey, what is this recipe going to look like? And then you get what you get out of it. And so, yeah, like I said, I just think a big difference for us is we're really focused on being very open with our approach to how we're going to make the crust flavor come out and use roasted peanuts to really come through at a rate that is kind of outrageous to a lot of other breweries. But if you mess around enough, you find out. So we did quite a few trials, not just with that beer, with all of our beers. And we've kind of really found a lot of fun, creative tools for us on the production side where we could take something that maybe tastes a little bit like raspberry and make that raspberry punch you in the mouth on the very front of the sip by adjusting some basic things.
So it's not raspberry though, is it?
No. I'm just saying that's like a good example of one.
Yeah, but this is a great grape concentrate.
Yeah, Concord grape and peanuts. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. So. Well, and you talk about accessibility too, you know, for it being a flavor that everybody has had at least once in their life. Hopefully a lot more than once. I mean, PB&Js are great. But am I right in saying it's gluten-free as well?
It is, yeah.
So that's a whole other level of accessibility as well, mm-hmm. right? Is that a conscious decision, or is that just by nature of how you're brewing it that it turns out that way?
Both. I mean, there was a whole lot of push for gluten-reduced products and a whole lot of gluten-free products. As craft beer has moved from this thing that's this counterculture, you know, you're in the 30 to 10% if you like it, or it was really cool to drink a 90 IBU IPA that was so bitter that no one else understood, but you were punk rock or cool or whatever because you liked it and people just didn't understand your palate. Well, craft beer is, you know, mainstream now, and you know, if you're not considering someone's mother or grandmother or, you know, not your classic craft beer drinker, I think you're missing out on a lot of the market. So there's a lot of product, you know, we just saw that as a huge opportunity for us. And then we started to actually realize, hey, man, there's also huge production efficiencies and benefits in running this that way. Let's kind of just make this our thing. So we do probably at any given point 4 to 6 completely gluten-free products.
Oh, nice.
And they're typically don't taste like beer at all. So, I mean, Zool Beverage Company.
Yeah, right. One thing I want to talk about, you just talking about production got me thinking about it. I mean, obviously, this is not like some newfound success. I mean, it's on another level for Zool, but I know like the Rhymes Like Dimes got some recognition which is delicious. And love the can as well. But I'm just curious, you know, how much of a presence does Zool have outside of Knoxville, outside of the region? And does the success of beers like Rhymes Like Dimes and the PB&J mixtape getting, you know, so much recognition, does that change at all plans for trying to grow beyond Knoxville? I guess, where are you at right now and where do you think Zool's going?
I mean, so, you know, all the national recognition on, you know, either PB&J, which we've had in, you know, articles for Untappd, things like that, and then, you know, obviously winning World Beer Cup medals opens the door for a lot of other breweries to pay attention to you and want to work with you, which within the industry, a lot of people are doing a lot of really cool things, and we can learn from those people really, really quickly if we're working with people all over the country, and especially other breweries that are producing kind of the same line of products. People line up around the block for it, so it's kind of like, hey, we've got this secret weapon, you've got that secret weapon. Let's talk and figure out, you know, how we can both utilize this in our own markets without really infringing on each other. So there's a whole lot of kind of very non-proprietary information that gets shared within just collabing with a lot of the breweries that we do. But yeah, I mean, our reach has gotten well beyond Tennessee. We've sent beer to Europe before.
Oh, wow.
We send beer pretty consistently to South Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia. It's just a limited quantity. Right. And a lot of it is based around if we're working with other breweries or doing big events or festivals or have some other market or activity going on in that market, then it makes sense to send beer out there.
Yeah. And in addition to Zool, the tap rooms, is there a way to sort of keep up where you can get your hands on these beers? I'm sure a lot of people are asking for it, right?
How do you
manage, if I'm wanting to go out and find me a PB&J beer, which by the way, when I do, I usually put it in our group message to let everybody know, but I'm telling you, everybody's all about it. What's the best way to keep up with how to get your hands on it?
Our Instagram is pretty on it with the PB&J stuff now. We know people want to plan and all that, so we typically will announce at least a week before and kind of structure a PB&J release day around that. So Instagram and Facebook are definitely the best two places to keep up with that. I believe there is a Facebook group around PB&J that kind of keeps tabs around any information that they find out about,
like
that.
Separate from Zool, this is somebody else's.
Yeah, I think somebody started a PB&J mixtape group. So
now that tells you something.
If you're really a super fan, you might find some friends in that group. So
yeah. Well, before we get done here, I wanted to ask just a couple more questions. One, the name PB&J mixtape. Mm-hmm. There's always a story behind a name.
Sure. Yeah.
So what is this one?
So it's funny. We kind of avoid puns. We avoid using what the actual finished concept is in the name. But we tasted that and we're like, this is so straight up in PB and like PB&J. We just need to call it PB&J something. We really liked kind of just the nostalgic mixtape culture, which kind of fits our brand with metal and hip hop and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, we were laughing about like, oh yeah, we all used to get records off of datpiff.com or like, oh, yeah, you know, just mixtapes from all that stuff. So just the name PB&J mixtape kind of came up and we were like, yeah, that's got a nice, it's very self-explanatory, clear. I think people will dig it. And then we got a really cool can design from the artist and that really kind of sealed the deal on like, yeah, let's go in this direction with it. So
when you initially find this success with this beer and you start realizing how much people are enjoying it, I imagine there had to be some sort of shifting of gears, right? I mean, you didn't think that it was going to be as big as it was.
Yeah,
so what was like the initial, I know you said like the people that work here at the brewery sort of embrace the chaos now of people lining up around the block and that's a special day. But what was the initial, I don't know if chaos is the right word, but what was sort of the initial realization of, hey, this is something bigger than we thought? And how did you adapt to that like on the fly?
So we fill crowlers of new brands that we haven't had a chance to design a label for and do all that kind of stuff. And typically we'll fill, you know, 50 to 80 crowlers and that lasts us a week or so. We filled like 180 of those and it was gone that afternoon.
Wow.
And I was just in shock of like, no, there's more cans back there. You guys clearly didn't find them. There's no way we sold that many. So we came in the next day and we filled a couple more kegs worth into cans and they sold out again. And I was like, oh boy, this is definitely another animal than the rest of our products in the sense of people are buying 3 to 5 crowlers at a time to take home. So that was kind of the early indication. We knew when we did that first batch, we would sell those cans like crazy. But then we real quickly learned even one big batch is not enough. So now we're doing like 4 plus batches all on preparation just to have enough to kind of feed that monster. So
yeah, normally I'd say like quantify that. What does that mean? But I think maybe, you know, to the average person that doesn't brew,
sure.
Like
yeah.
how big of an operation, how big of a part of your operation is the PB&J specifically? And can you sort of paint a picture for how long it takes from like, hey, it's time to make a new batch to it being ready? Because I imagine it's not like a instant thing, right? You have to prep for this kind of stuff.
It's probably about 10 days, we kind of make a base for it, and then we add in all of the other ingredients. So with a lot of our sour products, or our gluten-free sour products in particular, we make a large batch of like a neutral base alcohol. And then that's where I was talking about on the back end. As brewers, we get to kind of play around and add and be mixologists and create a lot more on that end. So the process can take between, 6 and 10 days.
And that's to make how much? I mean, you're talking about enough to...
About 500 gallons.
Okay.
And then, we'll do that four times in a month, and then we'll turn around and do it again the next month. And
so
we're always
400.
In a position where we're like, we need to do more than we did last time because right. it's not lasting. So, but yeah, it's about 2,000 gallons a month right now on production, which would be about 20,000 12-ounce cans.
Wow. Are you selling cans elsewhere? You get the cans here, and then it's just keg.
We send a little bit around because we realize how much people connect with it, and we think it's a really awesome opportunity. We are sending beer to Chicago to throw 10 cases on there and find, somebody out in Chicago might come seek out Knoxville, or it might bring up the conversation out there. So we strategically distro a very small portion of it, but we realize everyone in Knoxville is going to eat it up. So
right.
We try to keep it all in-house.
Well, speaking of the people in Knoxville, I was going to say, I'm calling it the Knoxville house beer. It's what it seems like to me. I mean,
we've gone so far from beer.
even though that's not an official recognition, what is that? The idea of that, mean to you as a brewer and as a what does it mean for Zool as well? Just to even be considered in the conversation for being like the beer of Knoxville, because that's exactly what it seems like to me.
Really appreciate that. I mean, I haven't really even thought about it, in that kind of sense. But I think at the end of the day, like, it just means a lot to create something that people connect with on that level. Like, so much of our tap room, our brand, the music, all of the, can designs, so much of that, we realize, the power of how good it feels in your hand and how much that means to certain people when they're sharing with other people and whatnot. But for the liquid side of that to just, smash every expectation that we ever had is, it's really cool, I think, for the whole team. And everyone takes a whole lot of pride in, we get to produce, sell, and provide this to people that really genuinely want it and are really genuinely excited about it. And that's not something that you get every day at every job. So I think, I'm really thankful for what it means, not just to me, but to the whole team on, they get to go home and feel really proud on, they know they're knocking it out of the park with that one, whether it's the bar staff dealing with 150 people in line or whether it's, the guys cleaning kegs and back there helping on the production side. I just think it's a huge pride point for all of us that, we've been able to drum up something that people get that excited about.
So. And is it getting close to award nomination season? I don't know if it's like it is for journalism. There's a season in which, you start getting nominated for things and, the awards, everything.
There's a lot of competitions, but it really doesn't fit in any category except for maybe just the straight experimental category.
Yeah.
But we've been kind of mulling over, should we be putting this in competitions? But really, we've just focused a lot more on our lager and IPA program for a lot of that kind of stuff. So.
Gotcha. Well, one more time. I know we talked about it earlier, but people aren't going to want to miss their chance to get their hands on it. What's the upcoming opportunities to try it? And also, what is the best way for people to keep up with everything Zool's got going on?
Sure. We try to keep it on tap all the time. So if you are near the downtown/Fourth and Gill area, we've got plenty of parking, worth coming and just giving it a taste. We are doing a release on Friday the 22nd, starting at noon. We'll put some heaters out and try as best we can to manage the cold of that day. We might have some hot chocolate, some things like that. So.
Nice.
But yeah, we'll have a big, huge day there. The best way to follow on all this stuff is through social media on our Instagram at Zool Beer or on our Facebook account, Zool Beer Company. So, and if you're not downtown, you can also find it at our Hardin Valley location. We always try to keep it on draft there as well. And whenever we do have canned releases, there is a portion that makes it out to the Hardin Valley location. The bulk of the release will be at downtown, though. Keep an eye out and hope to see everybody come stop by the brewery before Christmas.
Awesome, Bentley. I appreciate it. Awesome to see how much success you found since the first time I saw you sitting in this chair, man, 3 years ago to now. And it's been really cool to follow the PB&J mixtape trajectory. So thanks again for joining here on the podcast, and we'll talk soon.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Awesome. Thank you. Well, that does it here for the podcast today. A big thanks to Bentley for having us over at Zool, and a big thanks to him for joining us here on the show. As always, the Scruffy Stuff is brought to you by Knox News, so head on over to knoxnews.com to see all the latest stories about downtown Knoxville and East Tennessee, everything from growth and development, which I cover, to business openings and sports and politics and fun things to do in East Tennessee. Of course, we appreciate your support here on the Scruffy Stuff, but if you'd like to take that support a step further, please visit subscribe.knoxnews.com to take advantage of our latest offers. And before you head out of here, be sure to check that podcast description. There will be a link to both the Urban Knoxville Facebook group and the Urban Knoxville newsletter, which will keep you even more up to date with what's happening around town. And if you could, leave us a review, a 5-star one, if you would. Tell us what you love about the show and what you would love to hear us talk about next. And if you'd like to keep up with me between episodes, please give me a follow on Instagram at KnoxScruff. And be sure you subscribe to that podcast so you get a notification every time a new episode drops, or just come back here on Tuesdays. We'll be here, and we hope to see you soon. Until then, stay scruffy, Knoxville.